As you age, the fatigue and failing endurance you feel can't be fixed with more and more caffeine. So introducing a new way to start your day, Super Beats Heart Chews. They're a tasty treat that can give you the energy that you need and are good for you. No more afternoon coffees, energy drinks, or candy for a quick pick-me-up. Add two delicious plant-based Super Beats Heart Chews to your morning routine and promote heart-healthy energy for your day without a caffeine crash. Because Super Beats Heart Chews' unique clinically researched grapeseed extract promotes heart-healthy energy and normal blood pressure as part of a healthy lifestyle. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Heart Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Join over 1 million customers and get free shipping, free returns, and a 90-day money-back guarantee. And right now, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at danasbeats.com. Super Beats Heart Chews. They're a tasty treat that can give you the energy that you need and are good for you. That's danasbeats.com. danasbeats.com.
Worldwide effort we're leading won't solve the problem of high gas prices overnight. But over the last month, likely due in part to the anticipation of this action, we've seen oil and gas prices out of the wells. Oil and gas prices on the wholesale market come down significantly.
He sounds like Mel Gibson.
Who was that?
Vocal tonality. Whoever that guy was, that voice. That was the president. That was Joe Biden just a little bit ago. He had a press conference in which he sounded like Barry White. Welcome to the show. It's Friday, danalash.com. Good to be with you today, this Friday. Hey, got a lot of stuff that we're going to break down. We got a packed show today, actually, too. We got all kinds of people on. We got Mr. Snerdley on the show today. Going to be coming on the show a little bit later. And a lot. We got a lot of stuff. I'm going to try to get to some hate mail here a little bit later as well and go through some of this big stuff. I have to make, I have 3 things that you are going to have to give me a little leeway on because I've got to get it out of my system before tomorrow. Otherwise it'll just be, I'll be doing it all weekend. I really need to make fun of 3 things. And we're going to talk about that here coming up. So first and foremost, Joe Biden. Did you guys see the tweets yesterday? Oh my gosh, you guys, they got a new graphic artist or something. I don't know if you guys see this tweet yesterday. God bless America. See, there's certain times when I hate the internet, which is about 99% of the time. I hate social media. I hate the internet. I hate all of it. And then there are times when I'm like, you know what? The internet's a really good place. I think about this every single time I see a dog video. Or, you know, where I see something about bad architecture. I don't know. I just think that satisfies me. And I saw this graph that was, I'm here for the memes. Let's just be real. I saw this graph just yesterday evening. It's just too funny. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee put this out. And it's actually a really crappy graph. All they say it comes from a certain some kind of whatever. They say U.S. regular all formulations gas price. And what they're trying to argue is how many dollars per gallon. Dollars per gallon is being saved. And it's so bad, guys. So do you remember when Biden was saying that, hey, you guys are saved 16%. On your hot dogs for the Independence Day festivities, remember?
16 cents.
Sorry, 16 cents. Oh, sorry, what did I say, 15? Heaven forbid I shortchange you. 16 cents. 16 cents for your Independence Day food. Well, now, guys, according to this graph from the DCCC, you've saved a whole 2 cents. On gas from November 22nd to November 29, you have saved 2 cents on gas. And then I think of that, we did it, Joe, call from Kamala Harris. When she found out they finally won and she's like, Joe, we did it. Yay. Remember that whole, it was so great. Yeah, I know. So cents. And they decided that they would we're going to put it out like in a graph. And they inadvertently, what they ended up doing is they ended up admitting that, okay, well, Biden does actually control gas prices. So that means that this is all his fault. If he can save you money, then he can raise it too, right? So saith logic. We did it, Joe. Hashtag backpats. Yay. So great. And they got so gloriously ratioed. Thus, the ratio was superb. It was stunning. Sidebar. I hate it when people say that on comments. Like, there's like a picture of somebody and they're like, stunning. And it's clearly not. I'm just here for the comments and the memes today. 2 cents. And they rushed out a brag graphic to commemorate the occasion. So, 2 cents. Meanwhile, in California, they're getting murdered. I was murdered over gas prices. They had this news crew go out. They had this news crew go out and interview people. And people were like, I can't do this anymore. They were like all sad, filling up their gas tanks and all that. They're at the gas station filling up. And they were telling the press, we can't do this anymore. It's so bad. It's awful. And I don't know if that's exactly what the television station was trying to go for, but it was funny nonetheless. But they had said that it was just too high. It's too dang high. Listen to this. This is audio soundbite. This is NBC audio soundbite 6. Listen.
But for drivers, a big speed bump, the price of gas. Price is now at their highest level in 7 years.
I just topped off the tank today. We're almost at a double from where it was a year and a half ago.
When you add in the price of groceries, when you add in the price of housing and everything else that's hitting the wallet and the budget these days, it does add up and does make things difficult.
For some, it was reason enough to stay home.
Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous. It ruins a lot of plans, honestly.
Yeah, it ruins a lot of plans. It ruins a lot of plans, and they're like, I can't take this anymore. It's why a lot of, they're just like, I can't take it. And you drive everywhere. There's a reason why Missing Persons wrote Nobody Walks in L.A. It's because nobody walks in L.A. Everybody always drives everywhere. Everywhere. So, this, it's not good. And then the jobs numbers still aren't good. Whew. So this was the speech that he made where that honestly, I swear to you, that was him. That was him. That was and he just sounds horrible. Bust out the party hats because we got a 2 cent drop. Where's our credit? High gas prices aren't our fault, but the 2 cents we saved you. Where is our credit? Give us the credit. It's like the cost of a 4th of July cookout in 2021 is down 16 cents from last year. 16 cents. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do with all these cents? Kane, you could take your 16 cents that Biden saved you over Independence Day and your 2 cents that they saved you off gas. You're living your best life, my friend. Whew.
My next, I guess the milestone is 2 thin dimes.
High five and all the angels over this one. Yeah. Just.
I love how the graph had half a cent in there just so they could show 2 line drop.
Oh, man. I mean, that's a stretch. Someone had to do that. I mean, like someone to tell somebody to make that graph. Someone had to be like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We need you to literally show the cents by half so we can add more lines in there. But the memes, if you got this email prep last night, I never tell you to go read the comments. I never tell you that. Do yourself a favor this Friday, my friends. When you get that, if you signed up to get the email prep, the daily prep, Wednesday and Thursday prep. I have it linked in there. You'll see it. I need you to clicky click on that. And I need you to go and behold the glorious memes that have been bestowed upon us, because this is why the internet was really made. The meme makers out there, like, reported for duty, they did their jobs. It's truly glorious. I saved all of them. Did you see them all? They're amazing. 2 cents, guys. living his best. We're living our best lives. 2 cents. 2 whole cents. Now, yesterday, Alec Baldwin gave an interview to George Stephanopoulos in what was one of the craziest things I think I've ever seen, if ever, ever. And I don't know if you guys watch this. He did not do himself any favors, and I've never seen anything like it. Stephanopoulos ended up saying that it was like his, most intense? How did he describe it? It was the most intense interview that he did. I need you to listen to audio soundbite 9, because I can't believe that he said these words in this order on national television. Listen.
I feel that there is, I feel that someone is responsible for what happened, and I can't say who that is, but I know it's not me.
I'm confused. Someone is responsible. I don't know who that is, but it's not me. Can we save that audio for everything? Just save it, take it, and just save it. Put it in a little audio Tupperware bowl and stick it in the radio fridge. And we're going to save it and we're going to bring it out often. He's setting up his defense is what he's doing. But is that necessarily the best way to... That's like, Kane, you run somebody over in a crosswalk. The cops pull you over and you're like, gosh, dang it. I don't know. Someone, yes, is responsible for what just happened. It wasn't me. I did not do that. That was not me.
It's not going to fly.
Isn't that what OJ said?
Well, I guess not in so many words.
I mean, you had the gun in your hand, dude. But it wasn't me. Now, audio soundbite 8, listen to this. It just gets even more ridiculous. This is from this interview. Oh, yes, you need to hear this because this is going to enrich in your life today. This is insane. Listen.
What do we come out of it? What changes can be made? Because where you have a person where, as I said, this is one in a billion that someone puts a real bullet in the gun. That never happens. And the idea that a real bullet Except was in did. That gun and would come out of that gun and kill that woman, that was not even in the realm of possibility. And that's the thing that they must find out is where, who brought bullets onto the set.
Oh, well, you're the producer and you run the set.
And you had the gun.
And you also had the gun in your hand. Can I be mean for a second? Did you see him and his wife going out for coffee? I'm just thinking if your husband is that this couple, they are high as a kite. I don't know how else to say it. This is everything that is wrong with American excess. You have Alec Baldwin like, I don't know, somebody did something and it wasn't me. And his wife, when she got caught pretending to be from Spain and being Spanish, when she never, ever was born in Spain and she was not raised Spanish. She was raised by like 2 American parents here in the United States. They went on vacation. She's like the girl who goes on vacation and gets her hair braided on the beach and then comes back thinking that she's actually an islander. That's what happens. She's one of those people. And they were out getting coffee. You would think that if your husband is out on ABC saying, well, it wasn't me, I didn't do any of this stuff, I wouldn't wear like dark leopard Peg Bundy leggings with Clydesdale horse platform heels and a Montclair jacket that's probably about $2,000 and do like a geisha walk into the cafe to get my coffee all dolled up. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, read the room, lady. Read the room. How you say cucumber? Isn't that what she said? Like on one of the morning shows? They are a mess. We have a lot more on this. I have 2 things to make fun of too as well, because this is Alec Baldwin. I can't, dude. And then Joy Behar and The View and Whoopi Goldberg and fetuses. Wow. Have you ever met a fetus, Whippy? We're going to have a conversation about this as well coming up, so you don't want to miss. It's Friday. Who knows what's going to happen? Stuck on what to give your friends and family this year? Wish them a merry softness and happy new year with new comfy underwear, loungewear, and pajamas from Tommy John. When your loved ones start their day wearing Tommy John, they're that much more comfortable, so they can do everything better. Tommy John loungewear's luxuriously soft tri-blend and micro-modal fabrics mean four-way stretch and no fuzz or lint balls. Plus, Tommy John features thoughtful, tagless labels because you can't be comfy when you're getting scratched by a tag. With over 17 million pairs sold, giving the gift of Tommy John underwear and loungewear has become a holiday tradition for families all across the country. Returns and exchanges are free, and it's all backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. That's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. Get 20% off your first order right now at TommyJohn.com/Dana. That's TommyJohn.com/Dana for 20% off. Order now so your gifts arrive before the holidays. TommyJohn.com/Dana. See site for details.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
Okay, so a few things here. We're watching this trial, and we're going to talk about this coming up after headlines. Both parents are facing four counts in this Oakland County, Michigan school shooting. The prosecutor just announced this, so we're going to discuss this and break this down for you coming up here after this segment. The drunkest country in the world, drum roll, I'm actually shocked that it is in Ireland. It's actually Australia. But I will say, how long have they been in the lockdown? That was not factored into this piece. There was a study that was done by Global Drug Survey, and they asked 32,000 people from 22 different countries to monitor their alcohol consumption just over the last year. So guess what? Australia, they got drunk an average of 27 times over the course of the year, double the global average, which is only 15. They drank two nights a week, and they became, on average, heavily intoxicated about once every 2 weeks. Women drinking more than men, shattering the stereotype that Aussie males were the hardest drinkers. But again, this is, people were saying that they largely managed to avoid COVID lockdowns. Are you people ridiculous? How stupid and illiterate are you people? No, they have been locked down forever. No joke. Well, no, yeah, no wonder they're drinking. Alcoholism, drug overdoses, everything has increased. That's just crazy. Good heavens. So a couple of other things. This is Daily Caller piece. Hunter Biden's therapist said that Joe Biden triumphed over dementia in 2019, according to a new book. Hunter Biden and his therapist joked about the president having dementia in a text exchange from 2019, according to Miranda Devine of the New York Post. In the book Laptop from Hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and Dirty Secrets the President Tried to Hide, Hunter and his therapist, Keith Abelo, apparently exchanged text messages about Biden in January 2019, a few months before the president launched his election campaign. And so that's kind of interesting. It could be they were joking, because some people say that, you know, just sort of like haphazardly about their parents, but it's a little weird, right? We have a lot more on the way. We'll update you about these charges and more. Stick with us.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Every year, December brings the joys of the holiday season and gives us an opportunity to reflect on the year gone by and look ahead and begin to imagine the new year to come. This year, we can reflect on an extraordinary bit of progress. Our economy is markedly stronger than it was a year ago. And today, the incredible news that our unemployment rate has fallen to 4.2%.
Good grief.
At this point in the year, we're looking at the sharpest one-year decline in unemployment ever. Simply put, America is back to work. And our jobs recovery is going very strong.
Wait, what? No. Except it's not. And it's still consistently under expectations. So, no. And he apparently also, he thinks everybody's dumb on the economy and what the numbers actually mean. Welcome back to the show. Nothing to write home about those job numbers, because it was a an over 50% miss on projections. Again. For like the 5,000th time in the row. I know, that's a new number now. Everything's made up anymore, isn't it? Right. Goodness. So there's some just wow. And he was saying that he had a cold. He had a bad cold. Also, one of the things that he had discussed in this, and yeah, that over a 50% like miss on the projections is bad. And it's kind of insane that that was presented as, oh, we're right on track. We're actually not on track. And we and he says that a significant lowering of oil and gas prices is a 2-cent lowering because it's literally 2 cents and nothing more. He also said this when he was talking about these at-home tests, which didn't make a lot of sense. And I have some criticisms of this because of the reality of it. This was, what one was this? Yes, I believe, yes, Audio Somebody 7.
And prices for those tests are coming down. But it still isn't good enough in my view. That's why I'm announcing that health insurers must cover the cost of at-home testing. So that if you're one of the 150 million Americans with private health insurance, next month your plan will cover at-home test. Private insurers already cover the expensive PCR test and that you get in the doctor's office.
So what you're telling me is that Obamacare failed, right? Because, and this is why I say this, he's getting some criticism from other Democrats. So AOC had said 28 million people in the U.S. are uninsured. Subsidizing insurance companies doesn't help them. Making people hassle with insurance for tests cuts against the goal of frequent testing. UK offers COVID tests free, and in other countries, tests are less than are $5 or less. We can do better. So you're telling me Obamacare failed? Yep. You know, like we said it was going to? That's what you're telling me. Good grief. It's I'm all for having competition, but it doesn't need to be subsidized. And you know what? You wouldn't have to worry about it if you weren't trying to take so much taxes. Good grief. By the way, I think Matt Iglesias made that graphic of the 2 cent saving, the 2 cents in savings for gas prices. Apparently,
you mean 4 half cents?
Yeah. Or he made another. He had another one, Matt Iglesias, who writes for some garbage can outlet. I forget what it's called. I don't even remember. He ended up leaving some other outlet to go to some other stupid inconsequential outlet, and he was the one who apparently created this graph. Ron Klain liked it, the 2 cent drop, and then the DCC repurposed it and just basically redid it. The DCC does that with maps all the time too. By the way, fascinating stuff. I tell you what, whoo boy. So I want to also hit on these charges that were announced today in this case, in this Michigan case. And I still want to read a little bit more in depth about it because it happened just while we were on air. And I always get a little, because I've seen some of the comments that have come out about it. They said Michigan prosecutor, according to WSVN Channel 7, filed involuntary manslaughter charges against the suspect's parents in the Oxford High School shooting. Now, I want to know a little bit more about how this 15-year-old got this pistol. Because the way apparently what the prosecutor said, the parents, Jennifer and James Crumbly, they got charged with 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. And that charge can be pursued if prosecutors believe that someone contributed to a situation where harm or death was high. And if convicted, they could face up to 15 years in prison. Now, the Oakland County prosecutor, Karen McDonald, said the parents were the only individuals, this is her direct quote, the parents were the only individuals in the position to know the access to weapons. The gun, she says, quote, seems to have been just freely available to that individual, end quote. Now, Crumley's father purchased this semi-auto handgun just last week. And there's a couple of things that I'm looking at with this. They said that the reason, the justification, the prosecutor's argument, and this is where I'm asking my question, because normally with something like this, I think negligence laws in these cases. Normally, this is what it would be considered a negligence. You have negligence laws in place. That's why I always argue against state-designed storage laws for a reason, because I do not want the government telling me how to keep and my personal private property. That's no one's business. And I'm more responsible, and I'm better at knowledge, and I can shoot better, I can handle guns better, and I know more about guns than anybody who's going to sit here and tell me about how to store them. So unless they can prove greater expertise than me, they have absolutely zero authority or expectation for me or any of you to take them seriously. And I will not apologize for being smarter than statists. So but negligence laws cover that kind of stuff, though. If you are, and it's not just with firearms, I mean, you have it with vehicles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my question was, well, why did she feel this goes beyond? And that's a case that the prosecution is going to have to make. And you got to be careful with charges like this, because if you overshoot in terms of setting a goal for what kind of conviction you want, then you might end up getting an acquittal and you end up not getting it at all. So this, she said that all I can say, and this is all she said, she says, all I can say at this point is the actions on mom and dad's behalf go far beyond negligence. That's what she says. So that's going to be something, like I said, they're going to have to make that case, because I'm curious to see how what ends up justifying that involuntary manslaughter charge. Why is it that over negligence? And I do agree. I think, and again, I'm waiting to know more about this particular case, but I just would like to know, because that sound, I mean, it almost sounds like that's a level of recklessness that's way beyond just simple negligence. They said they purchased the gun just a couple of weeks ago. They were called to school on the day of the shooting because apparently the son drew something disturbing. Now, here's the thing. Apparently, the school did not even check his backpack and insisted that he return to class that same day. That's according to some of the reporting. And so apparently the firearm that was purchased was for the 15-year-old. But again, that's not an illegal. Purchasing that is not illegal, because it's not illegal to have that and teach your 15-year-old how to use a firearm. Now, the officials had hinted that the parents could face charges. They've been saying that was going to happen, which I thought that it would, you know, it would at least be a negligence. But McDonald said the actions on mom and dad's behalf go far beyond negligence. Now, this... I want to wait and see whether other information comes out about that. Now, they said that it was absolutely premeditated. This 15-year-old, it was absolutely premeditated. They said they had no problems with that. She sounds confident about their case, but at the same time, you have to look at law very clinically, very logically. And like I said, it's one thing for negligence, like the horrible situation with Sandy Hook. That was some serious negligence. The mother, who knew that her son was disturbed, knew that her son had issues, allowed him to just keep a rifle in his room, apparently. And then she got him one. He kept it in his room. Then she put it in a safe that he had access to, but she told him not. It's still theft. He still stole a firearm to go and carry out his massacre, which was his first felony. His second felony was when he killed his mother. And then, you know, the rest. Allowing people that you know to be dangerous to have access is a negligence charge. The reason I bring this up is it just because it is a firearm and not a vehicle that it's considered involuntary manslaughter? Because are we now going to grade I'm asking because I'm looking at the law here, and maybe there's something about Michigan state law that I'm just not aware of, but I'm just wondering, we're going to talk about this more next week. We're going to invite my friend Andrew Branca on and to break down some of these charges because I'm curious as to whether or not the prosecutor has determined that the tool that was used substantiates involuntary manslaughter, where if you had a kid who took a car from his parents and had access from his car, and say it was Daryl Brooks, Daryl Brooks takes his car, drives into a parade in Waukesha, kills six people. Is the person who, if somebody owns that vehicle, it's not Daryl Brooks' vehicle, if somebody owns a vehicle, do they also get involuntary manslaughter because they did not stop him from having access? I mean, I think that's a fair question. And I'm looking at this very logically. We're gonna follow up on that. And then maybe the state knows something that hasn't been released yet as far as the actions of the parents. I mean, and that's something else, you know, entirely. So one of the other things that we're looking at here as we are winding down our first hour, I've got a piece on the Standard from a British paper talking about post-pandemic stress disorder. It's interesting how people are saying that there's all these heart conditions now that are coming up. London physicians are noticing all these heart conditions. Now, I have friends who are like, oh, it's fascinating because this is the areas where they have like the most vaccinations and all this other. I'm just, you know, just putting stuff on the table. We're going to talk about this. We're also going to get into the latest. The Jussie Smollett trial's wrapped up and they're going to start. The prosecution's rested their case. I think it continues next Tuesday. We'll probably have a decision next week. I can't even believe this clown show went to trial. I don't know if you saw, but Jussie Smollett's defense was to accuse the Nigerian brothers that he hired of being anti-gay and accusing them of, since they weren't white MAGA hat wearing guys, well, they definitely were anti-gay. So that's why they totally attacked me. And then the brothers gave the prosecution pictures of them literally dressed up at gay pride rallies. As you age, the fatigue and failing endurance you feel can't be fixed with more and more caffeine. So introducing a new way to start your day, Super Beats Heart Chews. They're a tasty treat that can give you the energy that you need and are good for you. No more afternoon coffees, energy drinks, or candy for a quick pick-me-up. Add two delicious plant-based Super Beats Heart Chews to your morning routine and promote heart-healthy energy for your day without a caffeine crash. Because Super Beats Heart Chews' unique clinically researched grapeseed extract promotes heart-healthy energy and normal blood pressure as part of a healthy lifestyle. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Heart Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Join over 1 million customers and get free shipping, free returns, and a 90-day money-back guarantee. And right now, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at danasbeats.com. Super Beats Heart Chews. They're a tasty treat that can give you the energy that you need and are good for you. That's danasbeats.com. danasbeats.com.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others.
The Dana Show.
The CDC is now reviewing pioneering approaches like we call test to stay policies, which could allow students to stay in a classroom and be tested frequently when a positive case in that classroom popped up that wasn't them. Up to now, you could go home when you quarantine. But rather than being sent home in quarantine, they'd be able to stay because the test would be available and regularly.
So students have to undergo regular testing to remain in school. Good grief. This is so ridiculous. It's so stupid. Welcome back to the show, DanaLash.com. Good to be with you all today. Oh, my word. So, by the way, the Biden family Christmas stocking photo, did you guys see that? I got some problems. I have some problems. His voice is ridiculous too, by the way. The Biden family Christmas stocking photo. They shared a picture on Twitter and it was the stockings of 6 of their 7 grandchildren. 6 of their 7 grandkids. Sounds a little odd that it's 6 of the 7. And it's not because the 7th is like a grown adult who doesn't want any of that. They have trees decorated with their family photos and photos of other first families. I'm sure they got the drums on there. Sure. But They said that they are knit stockings hanging on a mantle, and it's a tribute to Biden's grandchildren, 27-year-old Naomi, 21 Finnegan, 20-year-old Maisie, 17-year-old Natalie, Robert Hunter Biden II, 15, and little Beau, who's one. But the person who is not on there includes Hunter Biden's 3-year-old daughter, Navy Jones Roberts. Now, you remember, Navy Roberts, Hunter Biden met his daughter's mother, Arkansas native London Roberts, while she was working at a strip club that he was known to frequent in Washington, D.C. He wrote about their encounter and sold the story with her in it. He wrote about it and made money off of it. And he included the story in his memoir, Beautiful Things. He said, quote, "It's why I would later challenge in court the woman in Arkansas who had a baby in 2018 and claimed the child was mine. I had no recollection of our encounter. That's a little connection I had with anyone. I was a mess, but a mess I've taken responsibility for." She was on payroll while she was pregnant with his daughter. The New York Post published those text messages. And after she gave birth, he kicked her off of all of the insurance plans. Okay. Yeah. And they did the DNA test and everything, and he's 1,000% the father. There's no way that he is not the dad. And according to Roberts' attorney, they had to fight him just to get him to pay child support because he's a deadbeat. He's never seen his granddaughter, and I think it's garbage that Joe Biden doesn't force his deadbeat, drug-addicted, failure-to-launch son to acknowledge this girl. And I think it's trash that Joe and Jill Biden don't acknowledge this girl either. It's just tacky. It's just, you know, everybody sits here and talks about how the Trumps were trash. This is trash. Stay with us. This year, Kel-Tec is celebrating 30 years of game-changing innovation and performance. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms. Pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
I feel that someone is responsible for what happened, and I can't say who that is, but I know it's not me.
That's Alec Baldwin. He knows it's not him. He knows it's not him. It's somebody's responsible. It's a ghost. It's a ghost that's responsible, apparently. Welcome back to the show, everybody. DanaLash.com. Good to be with you. Make sure you go sign up for the newsletter, chapter and verse. Always good stuff. So the interview, that was from the interview last night where he was talking to George Stephanopoulos. And it was really cringy. It was cringy. Somebody was responsible and it's not him. That kind of encapsulates everything that gun control advocates believe, that everybody else is responsible except the criminal, except the person who actually did it. Someone else is responsible. That's why I get blamed for everything that happens. That's why you get blamed for everything that happens. You get blamed for all of the criminal activity that's done by people who either judges allow to plea down to nothing and they release them, or prosecutors just don't pursue charges. That's why you're always blamed for everything. So it's a lot ridiculous. I just watched that and I thought, the gall of this guy. Just the absolute gall. And then he said, he said, too, that he didn't feel guilty. He actually said that. He said that he did not feel guilty because he didn't believe that he did anything wrong. That's just amazing to me. He goes, if I felt that I was responsible, I might have killed myself. I didn't pull the trigger. The gun was supposed to be empty. It doesn't just go off. I don't care if it's a single action. I have single action. And you could sit here and write 1,011 frillion think pieces on this, but the bottom line is that A, you're responsible for checking the gun, and B, you didn't check it, and C, you had your finger on the trigger. Golly. He's trying to set up his defense. He's trying to set up his defense so that he can have some sort of, you know, plausible deniability here is what he's trying to do. So that he can, if there's can be some question of doubt in someone's mind about this, if there can just be some little wave of doubt. But the problem is that it's still him at the end of the day. He's like, at one point, what did he say? I was looking at this. He had said in this piece, and I was looking at the transcript of it. You'll have to forgive me. He was saying that he had pulled back the hammer at one point. Yeah, this was over. This is from his interview, some of the transcript from it. He had said, I didn't pull the trigger. He said he didn't know how the live run around made it into the gun. And he was talking about protocol. He goes, if your protocol is you're checking the gun every time, well, good for you.
What?
That's what he literally said. After Stephanopoulos brought up how George Clooney said he checks his own gun himself or whatever gun that the armorer gives him every single time when he's on set. And Baldwin's response was, quote, if your protocol is you're checking the gun every time, well, good for you. Oh, my. He literally said, quote, someone is responsible for what happened and it's not me. He says, if I felt I was responsible, I might have killed myself if I thought I was responsible. And I don't say that lightly. Oh, my gosh. And Baldwin said that two crew members had filed suits, and he pointed out both had been filed before Hutchins' husband Matthew had filed his own. I mean, I am just stunned by this. This is a guy who would go off and blame everybody else for every single thing that happened as it related to firearms. He went at me so many times, and I would respond back to him, so he blocked me. He's a nasty little shrew. And I can put my feelings about the fact that he is a nasty little shrew to the side. But this is insane. And I'm floored with this. I just still can't believe that. The thing is, too, is that so Mamie Mitchell, and we spoke with Gloria Allred yesterday. She's the attorney representing Mamie Mitchell. Mamie Mitchell's the script supervisor who was standing next to Hutchins when this happened. And according to her lawsuit, she was confused because there wasn't even supposed to be any kind of discharge of a firearm at all whatsoever on set that day, because they weren't filming those scenes. It just is amazing that it's just awful. That's his best defense. He hasn't had charges yet, and it's because he's a white celebrity. But let's be real, he's a white celebrity. That's why he hasn't been charged yet. And there was all speculation because they're like, oh, well, you know, it's a single action revolver. It has such a light trigger pull. I would like to know the pull weight of his. He had, I believe it was a replica 1837 single action, real common, like an Italian made revolver. It's like real common, apparently, in a lot of spaghetti westerns. And the idea that. Because he had said, and I think he was told that he had that. I think that he was told to say that I pulled back on the hammer so he could try to put the seed of doubt in people's minds about some kind of drop fire. That's what I think. He seems like a reckless ass, and I think he pulled the trigger. And they said that, oh, someone else on set says he didn't pull the trigger. But then other people on set were saying, yeah, he did. He cocked it and pulled the trigger. But the bottom line is, let's just play devil's advocate for a moment and get into nuance that's irrelevant to the overall point. He's the producer on set. He runs the set. He sets the safety protocols. That's how film sets work. He is responsible for hiring the armorer. He handles all that stuff, and he didn't do it properly, and it resulted in someone's death. This guy is so quick to blame law-abiding gun owners for the actions of criminals who are in illegal possession that caused the deaths of others. But I'll be damned when he kills someone. Oh my gosh, a ghost did it. It's not him. He refuses to take any kind of responsibility or recognize his own culpability whatsoever, and I find it disgusting. No. But like I said, the only reason that he hasn't had charges against him is because it's political. Now, they said that I guess we're still going to get some details. I guess about the, because it's going to get, I don't know how much in the weeds it's going to get as to whether or not, because it was a single action Army revolver. I got a Colt Cattleman. Although I don't really think the pull weight on my, the only time I ever had my pull weight modified, I had a 38 Smith & Wesson air weight, and I had my pull weight lightened on that just a bit. For some of these old revolvers, for some of these guns too, the pull weight is like the safety. It's like you got to really, you know, you got kind of a workout depending on, I can't even remember what I had my pull weight on my 38 move to. And I was trying to remember what the pull weight on my Colt Cattleman is. That's a single action revolver, though. And that's, if you're handling a, revolver like this responsibly, it doesn't, I mean, that is all that, you know, the pull weight, et cetera, et cetera. There's certain things there that are technically the safety that's built in. It's why I get so mad. I had somebody come up to me at an event one time and they were trying to be like, because I prefer, and this is going to make, and I'm going to get to other stuff here in a minute, but I got to get this off my chest. I get mad when I have people sit here and they try to tell me by my business about what my preference of EDC is. And I had somebody who came up and was like, I can't believe you carry a Glock. You know, it doesn't have a safety on it. And I looked at this person like he just sprouted a second head out of his neck. And I'm like, what do you mean it doesn't? Have you ever seen a Glock? Have you seen a Glock? Because the safety's in the trigger. The safety's built in. There's a thing, there's a like a button in the trigger that has to also be pressed in order for that also to work. No. That's not, and this person would not believe me. That's like me. Give me a name of a football announcer, Kane. I don't know who any of them are.
Al Michaels?
I don't know who the hell that is. Who?
Al Michaels.
Al Michaels, that guy. It's like me going and arguing with Al Michaels about football. Sitting here telling me Glock don't have no safety in it. Shush up. Infuriates me. Ugh. Couple of things here, too. That I want to make sure that we hit on. Speaking of 2A stuff and Senate, we're going to get into Biden actually restarting Trump's Remain in Mexico policy. You knew that was going to happen, didn't you? He almost gave him credit today for the vaccine. He's one word short. And then he did the, he went back to the Remain in Mexico policy. That is something else. Whew. So the other thing that I was looking at here, I saw this. I had some people who were sending me this last night, and I thought it was pretty, it was kind of shocking. You guys know my home state is Missouri, and I see, like, there was a bunch of states, and it got a lot of coverage. I don't think it's gotten as much coverage now because so many other things have been happening, but there was a story. It was on the Second Amendment Preservation Act for the state of Missouri, and a lot of people that I've known for a long time who've been involved in grassroots 2A stuff really worked hard to get that passed. And it's SAPA, S-A-P-A, on Twitter. That's the hashtag that's used for it. And so it's the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And there were a lot of people who were writing about there are a lot of people who really pushed to make this happen. And I ended up seeing this video. And I'm going to pull this up here. It was from, we're going to have them on next week. And it's the Missouri Firearms Coalition. And they are upset, and they were really blasting one of the candidates in the Missouri Senate race, Eric Greitens, who's the former governor that quit the office, as an exchange to have charges against him dropped. That's the true story of it. Nobody was found innocent over anything. That's the true story of it. And he apparently was going after the Second Amendment Preservation Act and slamming it. And the Missouri Firearms Coalition, they put out a blistering video. And a lot of people, I had a lot of grassroots gun people sending me this all last night. And the Missouri Second Amendment Preservation Act, what it does is you can't basically be using police to enforce federal gun laws. And by the way, this also becomes like a 10th Amendment thing too, because you can't have, and there's Supreme Court precedent on this, you can't have the federal government demand that states use their local resources to enforce this stuff anyway. So there's a tie into 10th Amendment stuff there. And Greitens accused it. He used a Democrat talking point and said it was like defunding the police. Well, Missouri Firearms Coalition, their guy came out and, I mean, beat him over the head with this stuff. He was like, that's a Democrat talking point, which it is. And then he reminded everybody that Greitens at a crucial time refused to support constitutional carry in Missouri and also had changed the rule at Missouri State Capitol barring guns from being carried at the Capitol, which people had already been able to do, and got so much pushback over it that he had to reverse it. Just because you can shoot a gun in a political campaign doesn't mean you're actually pro-gun. So we'll follow that, but I had to put that on your table. We got a lot more on the way, folks, and you don't want to miss.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
This is my favorite headline of the year. There will be no other headline that is as good as this headline. And here's the headline. It's from The Hill. Man caught trying to use fake arm to get vaccine shot. A healthcare worker administering the shot said, quote, "The color of the arm made me suspicious, and so I asked the man to uncover the rest of his left arm." An Italian man who attempted to use a fake arm to get a COVID-19 shot to circumvent the vaccine mandates at public venues is now facing charges. A healthcare worker administering the jab to the 50-year-old man at a vaccine site in northern Piedmont region initially did not suspect the trick. Oh my, that's probably the greater concern. But then she touched the arm and noticed, according to The Guardian, that something was amiss and had the man remove his shirt. Philippa Bua said, quote, "I felt offended as a professional. The color of the arm made me suspicious, and so I told the man to uncover the rest of his arm. It was well made, but it wasn't the same color. And at first I thought I had made a mistake, that it was a patient with an artificial arm." Dude, you got to get yourself a real quality fake arm if you're going to be doing this. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be top quality. I hate everything, and this is why I want the asteroid to hit us. New York Post says a woman was caught breastfeeding her hairless cat on a Delta flight. A woman who took a Delta flight wasn't kidding around. Oh boy. When she actually nursed a hairless cat. It was an unidentified female on a flight from Syracuse, New York to Atlanta, Georgia. She got in trouble, and apparently it was all posted on Reddit. Of course, it was posted on Reddit. Stay with us. James Golden joins us next.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're going to have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
DanaLash.com. Happy Friday to y'all. It is good to be here with you as always. And I have to say, it is an amazing, amazing privilege to have this guest coming up. It's just surreal to me. This is one of the most, like, every now and then you go through this point in your life when you're like, is this real? Is this real life? I'm a meme right now. It feels like I'm a living meme. One of the icons, I think, of this industry, who really in part helped to create this industry. I mean, one of the reasons that you all are listening to me right now and that I even have this job and I even get a paycheck for this job is because of this man who is joining me now via Skype. And I am so privileged to have him on my show, Mr. James Golden, who people might popularly know as the one and only Bo Snerdly, the official radio observer for the Rush Limbaugh program, God rest his soul. And Mr. Golden joins us now. And it is such a pleasure to have you on with me today. And congratulations on the book, because I'm so excited for you on this. But just welcome. This is surreal. This is a very surreal moment for me.
I'm looking for Mr. Golden here, Dana, James, or Bo. How are you?
I'm doing so well. I'm great now that you're here. I'm fantastic. But I you have this.
You know, Dana, as you know, I.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I've told you how much I admire you, how much this audience that you have is so lucky to have your voice. You are a symbol of courage in our industry. Like Rush Limbaugh, Dana, you stand up for what you believe. You have taken so many unfair, scurrilous, mean-spirited hits, and yet you stay with such good humor, such optimism. I love you. I think you are remarkable, and the talk radio industry could not have a better champion for us at this time than you, Dana.
Oh, I don't think that anybody could ever leave me speechless, but you just did. My goodness. I thank you for that. And I am such a huge fan of yours. And I remember when I would hear a Mr. Snerdly referred to on air, and I always thought, I want to meet him. And there was a long time that we thought he was just making somebody up. Nobody actually thought that you were an actual person in there with him. And then I read this article. I think it was, I don't remember if it was New York Times or where I read it. It was a profile piece on Rush Limbaugh. And you were not only real, you were there. You're an icon in this industry. And you have this book out, Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick for 30 years. I'm curious as to what you think today about commentary and the state of politics, because I think it's incredibly fair to say that you actually helped create this industry, and with Rush Limbaugh helped shape what punditry and commentary and analysis is today. What do you think about the state of things?
I couldn't be more optimistic, and that may come as a surprise to people. I'm very optimistic about the state of things. Yeah, I know what Joe Biden is doing to the country. We all can see it. But Dana, America is a young country. I mean, we are still so young on the world stage, and we've been going through this back and forth with socialists and with liberals ever since this country was founded. It is not a new battle. We have new ways of expression in the battle, but we also have an America that still stands despite all the dings, all the nicks. We have an America that still stands as the beacon of light in this world. We have more people that want to come here. I mean, for instance, in Virginia, you look at a Winsome Sears victory, and I paid attention on election night. She talked about it in his pocket. And now she found her space in the United States military. And today, as a first generation immigrant to this country, she is Lieutenant Governor of the state of Virginia. American dream is still alive if people want to go out and achieve it.
I love that. If people want to go out and achieve it, that dream is still there. They can still go out and achieve it. We're talking to none other than Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. James Golden. I don't have to say James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snerdly, or Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. James Golden, because you're both now, and you're still, you're a radio programming icon, and you started in music. You're doing an afternoon drive time program. I know you got your new book out, Rush on the Radio, tribute from his sidekick for 30 years. And folks, you can follow him, and I suggest you do, because he gets some great stuff, at Bo Snerdly. The state of things, everyone always says that I think politics has always kind of been nasty. And people, I think, need to be reminded from time to time that they need to continue to be happy warriors. And that is the one thing that I think that I learned from you. I saw that message reinforced with you. I saw it with Rush. And I think that's one of the things that you all helped bring to politics, because you can have fun while explaining why people are wrong to think the way they do. And you can have a good time doing it. And it's so important to be a happy warrior. And you can't let this stuff get you down. How did you get that perspective? How did you get to have that perspective in this industry?
Well, look, first of all, you love to love what you do, because if you love what you do, then you transmit that to people. If that's what's inside of you, then that's what's going to come out, and that's what you're going to project. I love radio. I've loved radio since I was 14 years old. Rush started at age 6 in his house. First radio show on a Remco toy broadcast to an audience of one, his mother, right? And so at age 6, started honing his skills, writing scripts. When you love something, you have fun doing it. And to me, now that's not to say that it's all, you know, I'm not looking at things through a rose-colored glass. I mean, I've had days where you have, you know, bad people do bad things and all of that. That's part of life. But if you stay with your passion and what you love, it's easy to be happy about it and feel blessed and know that no matter what happens, if you're doing your best and you're striving for excellence and you're really giving it all you've got, it's easy to be happy. It is not easy to be happy looking at some things in the country. We don't want to see people suffering the way they're suffering. It's not just economic suffering. With inflation, there's some real challenges we have. There are people out here that are victims of horrible crime because of policies that are reckless and dangerous. We have people that are suffering from economic policies that have shut down their business in these past 2 years, things they've worked all their lives for. And so, yes, we see the inequities in life. We see the hardships in life. We see what people are going through in life. But it doesn't mean that you yourself have to give in and be negative. We're about trying to change people's lives and help people change their own lives for the better. And so I think it's just incumbent upon us to try to be filled with gratitude. We live in the greatest nation that the humanity has ever witnessed. We have so much to be grateful for. And so in spite of everything that goes wrong, in spite of all of the troubled times, in spite of all of it, we can still try to maintain a spirit of optimism as we move through our lives.
I love that. Talking with Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. James Golden. He's got an afternoon drive time radio program on WABC in New York. And his book released just at the end of last month, Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick for over 30 years. You can get it where books are sold, also at Barnes & Noble everywhere. People need to buy from Barnes & Noble because that actually makes it hit more on New York Times bestseller list as opposed if you order it, like if you go to Walmart, which is always crazy to me. JamesGolden.com is the website as well. What do you prefer people call you, Bo or James? I'm curious.
Doesn't matter. 30 years is Bo. 30 years is Bo. I've kind of gotten used to it. And all my life is James. Well, I'm really used to that one. So.
Yeah. Tell me how the Snerdly, I know you talk about all of this and you get into, you know, your relationship with Rush and radio, but out of all the names, Snerdly is just, there is no name that you can compare that to. How'd you get that? How did you get, we have a little bit of a delay here.
Well, first, let me start with this bow thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So here's what happened. So there were always Snerdlys with the Rush Show, but no one remembers the other ones because I was there for so long. There was Marva Snerdly and Mervyn Snerdly, right? Marva was a liberal. And so when Rush first came to New York and was syndicated, she didn't want her liberal New York buddies to know that she worked on a conservative show. So he called her Marva Snerdly. She didn't last long. Then came Mervyn Snerdly. Now, Mervyn wasn't a liberal, but Mervyn didn't last long either. And once I rotated onto the show, that was the arrangement with WABC, our flagship station, that WABC would provide the call screener and the engineer. So I was rotated on the show. I was the senior producer at ABC. Before that, I was the music director at ABC. So I walked out of one studio, produced their last music show, walked into another studio and produced their first talk show. I was rotated on the show, and of course, Rush and I clicked. Now, even before the show, I was, you know, giving stories to Rush that I thought he might be interested in, as were many of us there. And Rush was friendly. We all loved Rush from the very beginning. Let me tell you, he was just so wonderful a human being. You could not help but love this man if you knew him. And that's why I think it hurts the heart a little bit when people who don't know him try to tell people who he is. They have no clue who he is, right? But also, you know, from the very first time that Rush started doing the show, anybody that knew radio knew this was something different. He had a unique skill set. He had a unique way of expression, of a very, very sharp sense of satire and humor that no one else could emulate. He was just the consummate professional when he walked in there. And for 27, the show grew for 33 years. I think we ended up with 27 million listeners when he died. But that's almost unheard of, a 30-year growth track on a radio program.
Yeah. That's you don't hear stuff like that. You don't hear stuff like that. I have to tell you, I would listen when I was younger, and I was raised, you know, I was raised all by very, very far left Democrats, and I would listen every now and then. I'd catch it on the radio, and I'd think, this man is so wrong. Can't exactly say why, but he's wrong, and I know it. And then as I got older, I'm like, okay, he's making sense now. He's starting to make some sense to me. I get it. And then I'd be like, he really knows what he's talking about. Why haven't I listened to him longer than this? Because he really knows his stuff. It's just, you all raised a lot of people. The Rush Limbaugh program, I think, actually raised people into grown adults and educated them, which, and as you were saying, you know, over 30 years of doing this, there's nothing, I don't know, there's nothing in broadcast that you can compare that to. Not even Johnny Carson.
Yeah, it was remarkable. And in the beginning, you know, Rush didn't like to take vacations either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was so, I mean, we were there. And the thing about that, though, is Rush loved what he loved what he did from beginning to end. I mean, I imagine myself getting a death sentence. And look, I walked into a radio station when I was 14 years old, fell in love with it, knew I wanted to be in radio, right? So I am passionate about this business. I love radio as well. I get a death sentence. Bye-bye. It's been a great career, and I'm great. I'm going to go see some things in the world I haven't seen yet. Rush's bucket list was his audience. Oh. Every day. Oh. Every day that this man was not in treatment or dealing with the after effects of that treatment, he was at work. And he came into work just as prepared as he always was. I spent hours preparing to be there. His show was flawless. The energy level was flawless. You couldn't tell anything was wrong. At the end of the show, the three of us that were in the room across from him, our stenographer, Dawn Baczynski, our Florida engineer, Brian Johnson, and myself, we could see what those shows had taken out of him, because there were days where he could barely get out of his seat.
Mm.
There were days that he had to have someone come in and lift his attaché case because he didn't even have the energy to do that. It drained him to do those shows. But every single day that he could be there, up until the last show, he was there, and his performance was flawless.
Talking with our wonderful friend, Bo Snerdly, James Golden, Rush on the Radio, a tribute to his sidekick for 30 years. And I think that is, I have to say, that's a professional mark that I think so many people in broadcasting try to attain. I mean, that is, everyone always says hashtag goals, but man, that it really is. It's goals. It's goals for not just how to do a show, but what you said is so important, how his audience was his bucket list. That's amazing. And that's really, ultimately, I've never heard a better description. I've never heard a better goal ever described as to how a broadcaster should be with their audience. And you're still, you know, I mean, it's still educating people, and you're carrying that legacy on, my friend. You are. Yeah. And I have to tell you, thank you for the encouragement, because you were one of the very first people when I first got started into radio. You said something nice to me online one day. It was nice. Appreciate that. And I mean, you're making me emotional. You're crying and I'm crying. This is not how radio's supposed to go. Not how it's supposed to be. But I have to say, you have encouraged so many people out there. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you, like I said, I've been following you from the beginning, you know, your career. Wow. Wow. And we're all proud of you. We are so proud of you. And you know, one of the things that makes us most proud is that, Dana, we know who the people are that have always ceaselessly attacked you.
Yeah.
And we've been through it. You're going through it. The next generation of broadcasters will go through it because they're relentless.
Yep.
But you have never, ever lowered yourself to become mean and nasty like these people have.
I get tempted. And I tried. I there's some days when I feel like I fall short, but I try every day.
No, that's the best we all can do.
Right.
And so it's pretty remarkable. And you're going to have a very long career ahead, God willing. Hopefully everything goes right. You'll be at a 30 or 35, 40 year mark in this business one day too. And you'll be encouraging the next generation of conservative talk radio hosts.
As it should be, passing that torch, passing that baton on, because somebody's, you know, when we want to retire, you know, somebody's got to do this. Somebody's got to get out there and talk to people. We want to take a break at some point and be able to do that. Bo Snerdly, James Golden, the book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick for 30 years. And I have to say, of all the years that I have been, well, I act like I've been on a little over 10 years, and I'm sitting here acting like it's been 1,000 years I've been on air. But I have never, ever teared up on air until you join me on air. It's the first time ever in any professional capacity. And my producer's going, yes, I've never seen this. This is so weird right now. So you, I'm glad it was in a conversation with you. Bo Snerdly, James Golden, just truly an American icon. Thank you so much for bringing that program with Rush Limbaugh every day on air, and also for continuing to do it and for educating the next generation. God bless you, my friend. We'd love to have you back.
Anytime, Dana. God bless you, and thank you so much. It is an honor to be with you.
Thank you. An honor to be with you, my friend. That is Bo Snerdly, jamesgolden.com, Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick for 30 years. And you can get it where books are sold everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. If you're a longtime listener, you've heard me talk about Delta Rescue. And this is an organization that is so incredibly important to me. And right now, they need your support more than ever. By being a part of the Delta mission, you are the difference between life and death for so many animals. Join me today and becoming a member of the Delta Rescue team with your donation. Leo Grillo, the founder of Delta Rescue, is dedicated to giving the animals he rescues the life they deserve. Donate what your heart tells you to today in remembrance of a beloved pet that made you feel the way Leo feels about all of his rescue animals. Visit deltarescue.org/Dana and press the green donate button. And while you're at deltarescue.org/Dana, request my free estate package for information on Delta's tax-saving estate planning. It lays out all you need to know about growing your estate while letting your compassion for animals live well on into the future. This is only available at deltarescue.org/Dana. So show your dedication and everlasting love and make your legacy work for the animals. Visit deltarescue.org/Dana today.
But a lot of those places that have the high infections, they have mandates and they have passports and they have all these things. And so I just think we need to get real here, and we should not be imposing any type of mandates or restrictions on the American people, especially when you don't do that for people that are coming into the country illegally.
That is a Daddy Liberty down there in Florida. Governor Daddy Liberty, excuse me. You count, it's Ron DeSantis, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's saying the obvious there. I mean, and it's true. I mean, he's making a really good point. Why are we imposing mandates on people who are coming across the border, not with permission, not legally, when if you're coming into the country illegally or coming into the country legally, you have to go through all these like tests and all this stuff now. But if you just go down at the southern border, and you could probably get a check for six figures. Yep. I mean, just saying. Welcome back to the show. Happy Friday to you. It's Friday. And as we get, I'm just going to let you know, as we get closer to Christmas, we're going to be starting to play more and more Christmas songs. If I had my way, it would be Hallmark Christmas straight up in your face. But I'm trying to be, because I know some of you are like, I don't put my tree up until the 15th of December and all of that. I don't understand you people. That actually has like been some of the stuff. Because like last year, because we started Christmas music at Thanksgiving and people were all like mad. I'm like, whoa, just stop it. So we're going to, you know, we're taking a tasteful approach. You're going to have some stuff here and there as we get closer to Christmas and all this travel. At least we don't have for now, although they said domestic stuff is on the table still. But internationally, that's the thing, though. Can we stop? And I'm going to ask, because we have Dr. Scott Atlas, who's going to be joining us on the radio program here And as you know, he is the senior fellow in health care policy at Hoover Institution. He was the special advisor to former President Trump and a member of the White House coronavirus task force. And I was actually just asking Kane, this is what we were talking about right before we went to air. I was asking him, I'm like, I mean, do we, is there a current task force or is it just Fauci?
Good question.
Yeah, I don't think that there is a current task force. I think it might just be Fauci. I'm not quite sure. But I swear, is this mean sidebar? Sidebar, everybody, come here. Have you guys seen Labyrinth?
Oh, my God. It's been a while, but yeah.
Hoggle. Google it. And then you're going to know immediately. I can't help it. It's like a little, it's like watching Hoggle from the Labyrinth come out and sit here and tell me about stuff that's, you know, about how, talking politics when you should be talking health. I'm not trying to be, I'm sure that I look like somebody from the Labyrinth, but I'm just saying. Anyway, back to my point. Now we're good. We're good with the sidebar? Okay. But did you just Google it?
Yeah, I did.
You okay?
Well, I mean, I was laughing before because I know that you're making the correlation between the looks of our
I was doing no such thing, sir.
Our great Dr. Fauci.
I was doing no such thing to St. Fauci. Being facetious. Dr. Scott Atlas, though, he is going to join us. He's got a new book out, A Plague Upon Our House, My Fight at the Trump White House to Stop COVID from Destroying America. And he's got some blistering editorials. He unloads on Birx, on Fauci. He even goes after Redfield in this memoir. He said he's disgusted. And apparently, of course, Amazon's already suppressing. This is why, by the way, speaking of books, this is why do you think I didn't put this bad boy up on Amazon? Paws off my cannon. My kid's book about Second Amendment and self-defense and how it's not a crime, because Amazon suppresses stuff like this. That's why I wasn't even gonna deal. We're so brave books, and you can go, it's in my newsletter and it's also all over my social platforms, and you can go and get that book, and you can get the treasure chest set too. Use the code Dana to get 10% off the treasure chest set, which is the 6 book series. So Dr. Scott Atlas is going to be joining us because I have a million questions for him, as I'm sure you do. And by the way, if there's something that you want me to ask him, if you're in the chat, holler at Lorraine. Because sometimes if I get into the chat in the YouTube chat, I'm never going to leave and the show's never going to get done because I'm just going to start chatting and talking and hanging out and forgetting my job. So I'm kind of barred from going in there because shiny. But holler at Lorraine, and Lorraine will, if there's something really burning that you think that he has not answered or only he can answer, happy to ask. But there's a couple of things that I want to bring up with him. The first was that American Heart Association. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. The piece that came out is a study that came out that was looking at myocarditis and the relation to mRNA vaccines. And then there was a piece, I'm pulling this up, this is at the Independent, oh no, sorry, standard.co.uk. Listen to this. This was just yesterday. So this was a day after the American Heart Association survey, two separate things, right? This was a day after the American Heart Association thing came out. So at the Standard, a British publication, they say up to 300,000 people facing heart-related illnesses due to post-pandemic stress disorder, warn physicians. Now, this is where I get, they say it's, there's a 4.5% rise in cardiovascular cases nationally because of post-pandemic stress disorder, PPSD. Is that a thing?
It is now.
And I'm not being I have a tinfoil hat, but it's not on. Should I put it on? It's on top of my tree where the star is. We have a tree in the studio, and it's covered with glitter, which I don't like glitter. I threw out everything that had glitter on it. But we have, that's the literally the only ornament on there. I feel horrible. I feel like I'm shortchanging Jesus on his birthday. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because they say up to 300,000 people face heart-related illnesses due to post-pandemic stress disorder. This is also from NHS, and again, this is in Britain. All these, you have the majority of people over here who are vaccinated.
Yep.
With the mRNA vaccine.
It's the vaccine.
This is the day after the American Heart Association comes out and says, hey, just FYI, something shady happening here. The relationship, you know, between the mRNA stuff and the heart stuff, just kind of just FYI. And there was one statement of concern that was filed with it, but it had to do with like a typographical thing and something else. It from what I understand, because I had asked a friend about this who wrote me back. I haven't had clarification on the answer because she wrote me back something that was so scientific-y. I was like, I don't even know what to make of this. She works in a hospital. And she was like, basically, it doesn't change a lot. So I'm just saying, could it be that they're having heart-related illnesses? And again, not wearing a tinfoil hat, not because I don't have one, just because I can't get to it. But could it be related? This is where I go all Dana Carvey church lady. Could it be Satan? Could it be? Right? Is that too much of a stretch? Am I being...
Not at all. I don't think you should judge whether or not you're stretching too much based on what you see on social media.
See, and also this is where I get mad because I feel as though I can't tell if I'm trying to not make people think that it's like conspiracy stuff. And then I'm like, am I actually getting gaslit and behaving according to the gaslighting that's been coming from media? And then it makes me want to go out and be totally conspiracy theory just to rebel. You know what I mean? Like Bigfoot is real. Aliens are among us. All that. Although I think Bigfoot is real. But I don't, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm upset about it all the time. You'd try to curb that feeling, but we literally have no long-term data or any peer-reviewed long-term data on the the therapeutic side effects. And they've gone from, you know, at the beginning, 15 days to stop the spread, to get the vax to prevent sickness, and now the vax doesn't even stop the virus or stop the spread of it. And the simps on the left just keep defending it and saying,
you just said the simps on the left.
Yes. They always say that, oh, when the data changes, so does the approach, so stop being anti-science. Well, we now have some data, and some of it from the American Heart Association, showing a concern as it relates to the booster shot and myocarditis, yeah. And those same simps on the left are blocking that info. So why would you suppress the info on effective treatments for the virus, and why would you suppress the negative information that surfaces on these vaccines, or, I'm sorry, therapeutics? So they're going so far as to dismiss the American Heart Association's own data, dismissing it as misinformation without looking into what is actually there. And then you're just anti-science when that happens. So yeah, I'm upset about it.
Do you feel like he like stores it up? Everybody listening, y'all hear how he just stores it up, and then he just sits and he stews.
It's like my tinfoil
hat battery.
Out.
He's like, well, blah, 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 but he's nice about it. I mean, for now. And he just like, you were building that up.
Yeah, it's a little battery.
Look at you.
Stored it all up.
But I mean, this is, they say that they say the stress and the anxiety and everything, people are having heart issues. I'm just saying, probably also because of the mRNA. I'm just, speculating. By the way, didn't the guy who invented the mRNA technology, didn't he get banned off Twitter? But I think he was reinstated. But I also think, if memory serves, he got banned on Twitter because he had said something to the effect of, we should only be doing this with the people who are high risk. So it's so as not to force mutations. And then he got banned because the guy who invented mRNA, the former baristas who push buttons at Twitter, thought they knew more than the doctor who literally invented the mRNA tech. But okay. I'm sorry, but can you make a half wrap double whatever foam soy based macchiato? Those people they know more than that guy. So we got Dr. Scott Atlas. He's going to be joining us here coming up. Because we got some questions, right? We got all of us have a lot of questions about this stuff, especially now as we have all of these restrictions. And I would like to go, back to the Caribbean and go fishing again and pretend to be a pirate again, right? Have some rum, put up a skull flag. I'm not going to do that because I think actually we had one guy telling us why we actually shouldn't do that, especially if we get a little out there and we're doing deep sea fishing. It's like, I didn't know it was a thing. But I want to go fishing. I want to have some rum. I would like to create a motorized tiki thing that I can drive around in shallow waters and play pirate shanties, shanty music. But if I get back into the country, I'd have to go through like 11,000 tests. And it doesn't matter if you're vaccinated. That's going to be my first question, by the way, to Dr. Atlas is, why are we calling it a vaccine? Thank you. Because that would suggest that you're vaccinated, that you're inoculated, that you have had an immunity of some sort provoked within you. Here's the other thing that I was reading about. It was just last night. I saw this just last night. There was a study done, and it said people, get this, people with allergic conditions, including hay fever and a runny nose, and if you have atopic, like if you get eczema. So I have like eczema issues on my hands and fingers. So sometimes people see me wearing black stuff on my fingers. That's just because I don't want you to have to put stuff, because I have to put a steroid cream on it. They say that people who have hay fever, eczema sufferers are 25% less likely to contract the virus, according to this new study from Queen Mary University of London. And people with asthma were 40% less likely to be infected, even if they used steroid inhalers. And they did 15,227 participants, and they had questionnaires, and they were looking at, they were asking all of these people. Actually, it was technically 16,081, and they had, of that, 15,227 had filled out at least one follow-up questionnaire. And it was done between May 1st, 2020 and February 5th, 2021. And they adjusted for demographics, socioeconomic factors, but they said that they found that those with atopic diseases like eczema, dermatitis, triggered by allergens, that they may actually have a 23% lower risk of COVID. Is it because their immune system's already kicked into gear? And that's what it's, and your immune system, technically, that's what that is. Your immune system is overreacting and responding to that. Is that, do you think that's, I'm that's another question I'm going to ask, because I think that's fascinating, isn't it? Because that's me. I have those things. Do you sometimes find yourself wondering how much control you really have over your finances? Recently, we've seen a complete assault on freedoms and liberties by the government. Mask mandates, vaccine mandates, and now even vaccine passports, all trying to limit whether you can even go to a grocery store or restaurant. And we've seen how quickly the government can infringe on your personal freedoms. So are your personal finances next? This is why I believe in diversifying with gold. Gold is physical, it's tangible, and gold is safe from government control. Gold can give you true control over your wealth, control that's not tied to government-regulated financial markets. And the folks at Legacy Precious Metals are the gold standard when it comes to investing in precious metals. They have a team of experts who can counsel you on the best options. Call Legacy Precious Metals at 866-580-2088 or visit them online to download their free investor's guide information at legacypminvestments.com. That's Legacy, the letter P, the letter M, investments.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
All right. So, you know, we have Dr. Scott Atlas is going to be coming up and joining us here very shortly. This couple of things here that I want to make sure that we get to. I don't know how this is an issue. So apparently, if you eat oxen and you are white, that it's racist. That was a huge argument on social media this week. Someone was saying dry oxtail yuck, the gravy is gold. And a couple of different journalists, including The Hill Times and some economic publications, accused it of food appropriation because eating oxtail, if you're white, is racist. Have you ever been to Southern Missouri? Because my granny used to eat ox. I have not. I don't dislike different parts of animals. I've eaten sweetbreads before, but I'm just saying, that's one thing I haven't. Have you eaten oxtail? I'm not a fan. Just saying. It's just me. No offense. I'm just, you know. Yeah. Jussie Smollett's defense attorney accused the judge of physically lunging at her and snarling. The judge is basically like, you're crazy. There was all kinds of drama in the courtroom yesterday between the Jussie Smollett's attorney, and she apparently was like pacing back and forth while the jury was out and had kind of a fit. Oh boy. AstraZeneca uncovers what's triggering blood clots after its jab. The vaccine acts like a magnet and attracts platelets which the body mistakes for a threat and then attacks. New York has confirmed now 5 cases of the Omicron coronavirus variant. So yesterday it was 3, now it's just 5 in New York. White House says domestic travel vaccine requirements are still on the table due to said variant. And this, boy oh boy, a Chicago public school announced that all schools now have gender-inclusive signage outside the restrooms. That's their big thing, more so than test scores, apparently. Dr. Scott Atlas joins us next.
Dana gives you the meat and potatoes news of the day. None of that tofu news. More like bacon with a side of hash browns news. The news you want, the way you want it.
The Dana Show.
What you do is exactly what we were saying, and that is to be prudent and careful. And one of the things that's very clear is that you, if you have to be in an indoor congregate setting in which you're unsure of what the vaccination status is of the people around you, wear a mask.
The ongoing back and forth of what should be the best response and how are we ever going to be able to trust some of our institutions again? These are questions that are still swirling in Americans' minds. Welcome back to the program. It's Friday. I'm Dana Lash. It's very good to be with you. DanaLash.com. And you can watch the simulcast of the nationally syndicated radio show on the first as well. Joining us now, you are very familiar with this actual medical professional. He has a new book out, A Plague Upon Our House, My Fight at the Trump White House to Stop COVID from Destroying America. And it is coming out this month. You can pre-order, as I said now, Dr. Scott Atlas. And he was the special advisor to former President Trump as a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. And Dr. Atlas joins us now via Skype. Doctor, it's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I have to get your insight into what you think of this latest variant, the Omicron variant. Now, what I think 5 cases now in New York, and we hear from doctors in South Africa. I think Dr. Angelique Kotizi, who's head of the South African Medical Association, has said it's mild, and the symptoms might be unusual, but it's still mild. And yet we're hearing, it's harkening back to the days of, ooh, are we going to have lockdowns again? Is it going to be masks? What's going to work? What is your take or your thoughts or what you know about this latest variant?
Sure. Well, the new variant, first of all, we expect variants. That's what happens. Every medical student who's really had first year immunology knows that when you have a virus that has a pandemic that occurs, we end up getting mutations. Those are the so-called variants. This is natural history of viruses. And usually we have a virus that mutates into less lethal, less deadly forms. That's how a virus and pandemic ends and becomes what's called endemic, which is a sort of a cycle of cases without a lot of deaths. And that's what we hope will happen with this virus. We don't know about the new variant yet. I mean, we don't have much information. Israel, everyone's talking about, but they have a total of 7 cases in their country, the last that I saw this morning. And so, you know, we have to watch. It's of course, you know, reasonable to be concerned about it. But what's not reasonable is to be frantic and panic as if this is somehow an unexpected turn of events, which it's not. We expect a new, more contagious, possibly a variant. Like I said, the only thing that really matters is it really causing serious illness or death? That's what matters. And so we don't know yet. We have very little information, but from what we've seen so far, from what I've read so far, that's really not the case. So to somehow, think that this commands a sudden change in policy, again, it's just a repetition of what we've seen in the past, sadly, which is, you know, sort of non-scientific thinking, panic, people that don't know what they're talking about, pontificating about things, honestly, without using the missing ingredient here, critical thinking. If you have a virus that is expected to evolve, then when it evolves, why is that a shock? And if you have a virus that doesn't cause a lot of people to be sick, then what's the huge problem? So we don't know. Again, I want to stress, I don't know. There's a paucity of information here. But to conclude somehow that we need to start doing lockdowns is on its face almost absurd at this point in time with no information to indicate that. But secondly, the lockdowns failed. This is factual. This is not arguable anymore. Yet we keep seeing these people deny science. I mean, this is what I wrote about in detail in the book. This is what I saw in my 4 months of the task force. When I came in 6-7 months after Birx and Fauci had commandeered the policy, The Birx Fauci lockdowns and restrictions were widely implemented all over the country, almost without exception, for the 6 months before I walked in, for the 3.5 months I was there, for the months after I left, with no significant change. And the lockdowns, you know, by the evidence, failed to stop the infection from spreading. They failed to stop the elderly from dying, and they destroyed millions of families and sacrificed our children, particularly low-income families. So it's really the most heinous example of a misuse of public health advice in modern history.
We're talking with Dr. Scott Atlas, whose new book, A Plague Upon Our House, details his, from his insider perspective, what happened in the Trump White House and how he fought to stop COVID from destroying America. You mentioned, you know, I know you had some harsh words, and you have harsh words in this book as well, for you were talking about the Birx and Fauci lockdown approach. What was the debate like in the White House between some of the with the doctors on some of these recommendations? Give us some insight on this, if you can.
Sure. Yes, I think this is very important. This is one of the reasons I wrote the book, was to show what the people were that were in charge of this policy. Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci were government bureaucrats for 40 years. I was very different from them. They were the main doctors on the task force, along with Dr. Redfield. And my approach was, I came in after a health policy. I'm working on health policy for 15 plus years at Hoover Institution, and I had 25 years of medical science background in a clinical and academic medical care setting, doing research, helping take care of patients. So I come in, there's a question, for instance, at the task force meeting about the risk to children. And Vice President Pence asking my opinion, I came in, as I did always, with a dozen or more publications and the latest data in my hand. I went through the data, I cited the data, I critiqued the studies. If a study was done poorly, then the results are not valid. And all I was met with was silence or simply an ad hominem attack saying, I'm an outlier. Okay, that's not what a scientist does. Scientists use critical thinking. There was no critical thinking, no basis of knowledge that was being explained to me. There were these sophomoric tables and charts of the current cases per day and who gets the cases. This is stuff you could download from a public website. That's not analysis. The second part is, I was bringing in information. My goal, I'm an advisor to the president. It's a big healthcare crisis. You bring in data, but also you bring in experts. I brought in some of the country's top epidemiologists, infectious disease medical scientists, pediatric infectious disease experts, public health experts from UCLA, Tufts University, Harvard, Stanford. I set up a meeting with the president. Dr. Birx refused to attend the meeting. The meeting was scheduled so she could attend, and right before the meeting was held, the day before, she sent out an email, she's not coming. Okay, my goal is to provide information. If you can't stand up to challenge and listen to the other people, the experts doing the pandemic research, by the way, is who I brought in, and instead you're, for whatever reason, not willing to sit there and debate the evidence or, you know, listen to experts, and instead are complaining to the media, which Dr. Birx did, and to the House of Representatives, that there was a, quote, parallel stream of information, unquote, coming to the president that wasn't going through her. I was not to be viewed as a funnel or a filter of information. I'm there to provide expert information. And I did that. That's what a scientist does. Science is debating, is being challenged, and winning the debate on the basis of knowledge. Yeah. Not on the basis of ad hominem attack, going to your friends in the media, and honestly, when you think about this, when people have a position in the government for 40 years, that's not because they're politically neutral. It's because they have the skill to navigate a political environment using their friends in the media, their friends in agencies. And we saw that time and time again. I wasn't there to make friends. I came there for one reason. And that was because people were dying, and the policies that Birx and Fauci were running and advising the governors was failing. And, you know, by the way, all of the official White House advice to the governors was doled out by Dr. Deborah Birx. She was the task force coordinator, in writing to all the states. She visited dozens of states during the time that I was there, before I was there and after. I visited one single state. That's the state of Florida, and they did something very different.
We're talking with Dr. Scott Atlas, his new book, A Plague Upon Our House. A lot of people talking about the immunization or the vaccine. Why are we calling it, by the way? Why are we calling it a vaccine? And I ask this just because I'm not against vaccines. I'm not at all. I mean, I've had the chicken pox vaccine, etc. But there's this idea that there's a triggering of immunity. And usually when you are vaccinated and you are immune and you are inoculated, then that at least, I mean, maybe there are some rare cases, but it's not as widespread as we seem to be seeing. I mean, we had more fatalities this year than we did last year, but we have a huge majority of people who have been vaccinated this year. What do you say to that?
Okay, well, I mean, I look at the data and you have to analyze the studies that were done. And, you know, sadly, I'm looking at data from other countries and thinking it's a little bit more reliable, which is a very sad thing to say. It's a shocking thing to say. But I look at countries and I look at the data from Israel, Qatar, which is, okay, you wouldn't think of that as a reliable society, except they did heavy vaccination. They have published very good studies, and Sweden and the UK. And what the data shows on the vaccine, this is very important because the mandating of vaccines for people who don't necessarily need them and the lack of transparency, this is what we're seeing from our country, that has undermined the positive of the vaccine. And it has created a backlash that would not have been there because the data shows, and the best recent study is from Sweden, that the vaccine does the most important thing so far. It has a long-term, up to 9 months, effect on decreasing death and severe disease. That's very important. That's the point. But we know the vaccine protection against getting an infection wanes dramatically after only 4 to 6 months. So the vaccine is personally protective, meaning it stops you from dying. If you have a high risk of dying, it makes sense to take the vaccine. Mm. But if you are thinking it's going to protect you from spreading the infection or getting an infection, that is not true after 4 to 6 months. That's what the data is. In people who are vaccinated, they get reinfected after 4 to 6 months at a high, very low protection against that, and therefore they can spread. So the danger to others, you should not be afraid. If you're afraid and you have a high risk of dying, get the vaccine. You're protected against dying. It doesn't matter to me if the guy next to me has the vaccine because it doesn't stop him from spreading after 4 to 6 months. I want my own protection. I get the vaccine. And the people who should get the vaccine, it makes sense. It's a risk-benefit thing like everything else in life, are people that have a significant risk of a severe disease or death. The vaccine does not protect you from getting an infection with a mild illness.
Right. You've also, Dr. Atlas, have talked quite a bit about children as well, because there's the discussion about mandatory vaccinations for the coronavirus vaccine for kids. What is the risk to children at this point, and in the degree to which they are actually vectors for this?
Right. So this data was known back in the spring of 2020 when I first started writing about it, 6 months before I even went to Washington. And it's from all over the world. And the risk to children is extreme. Healthy children have an extremely low risk of a serious illness from the SARS-2 virus. Mm-hmm. And an extraordinarily low risk, nearly zero healthy children for dying. And in addition, the data was clear from all over the world, contact tracing studies. I'm talking about back in spring, summer 2020, and nothing has changed. There's no new information on this, by the way. It's not like we've had to learn this in a year and a half. We knew it then, but we ignored it as a country. And that data showed that children are only infrequently spreading to adults. In fact, the data was very clear from the countries in Europe that children do not significantly spread, even in schools. And in fact, teachers do not have a higher risk than anybody else for getting infections. So it is really, it's a lie to think that schools are a high risk environment. In fact, if I was going to design a job where I had low risk for COVID, I'd want to be an elementary school or a K-12 teacher, because kids do not significantly spread the disease to adults. That's been proven in Sweden, proven in Finland, proven in several countries.
We've seen it in a number of studies, like New York schools haven't been hot spots. They haven't been hot spots for transmission. I have one last question for you, Dr. Atlas. We have about a little over a minute left. A plague upon our house, the book My Fight at the Trump White House to Stop COVID from Destroying America from Dr. Scott Atlas, who served as an advisor for President Trump during this. And I tell you, we're very glad that you were there. Very glad that you were there, Dr. Atlas. My last question for you, a lot of people talking about the mRNA technology. I've seen two different studies. There's one, and I realized there was an expression of concern filed with the American Heart Association study that had been put up talking about heart tissue inflammation, the myocarditis. And then there was a subsequent study I was reading about in the Independent, a British publication, discussing heart stresses, and they were questioning whether or not it could be related. What can you tell us about this? A lot of people worried about what to get if they get it, and what effect that has on heart tissue inflammation.
Sure. Well, it seems like, you know, there's a lot we don't know because this technology has never been used in a vaccine before, and we've only had the vaccine for less than a year. Yeah. So we have no long-term safety data. We have only to look at what's been reported. What's been reported is there seems to be a concerning risk of heart inflammation, myocarditis, particularly in young males. Now, you have to remember, young healthy people do not have a significant risk from COVID. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's an equation there you have to contemplate as a parent, I think. There's some critical thinking needed. Right. But, you know, you have to look at, just as an illustration briefly, the UK advisory body that advises the national health system, the NHS, has held off on recommending the vaccine for people under 15. We have not held off on that. Our country is uniquely off the rails and denying science. You look at the data from other countries and you start realizing, okay, wait a second, there are rational thinkers out there, and right. We don't have them in the United States.
That's wow. I so appreciate your insight. This book is a must get, A Plague Upon Our House, My Fight at the Trump White House to Stop COVID from Destroying America. Dr. Scott Atlas, thank you so much for serving the country on this issue. We are grateful for your voice. Appreciate
That's you. That's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
DanaLash.com. Don't forget to order my book, Paws Off My Cannon. It's the children's book that is all about self-defense and teaching responsibility and truth, not just fear-mongering. We don't do fear-mongering. And you can get that at Brave Books. We're bypassing all the cancel culture stuff. And make sure you also sign up for that email newsletter, because you can get access. If you missed our discussion with Bo Snerdly, we have that for you. We'll send that out. And we'll also have the interview that I just did with Dr. Scott Atlas. Man, that man is sharp. We'll have that up on YouTube, and we'll send that out in the newsletter as well. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
It is Alec Baldwin, who had the gun in his hand but says this.
I feel that there is, I feel that someone is responsible for what happened, and I can't say who that is, but I know it's not me.
What?
Okay. That's not right.
It's a lot of stupidity right there.
I'll be on Jesse Waters' show tomorrow on Fox and back behind the mic with you on Monday. Prayers for our brother Sergio. Hope he recovers. Back with you Monday.